Welcome, everybody. We're back in action 2020, hockey in the classroom. As always, I'm your co-host, Matt Walasek, joined by my buddy and also co-host, Tony, down in Dallas. Tony, how's Dallas treating you right now?
Good. After that cold weekend up in Wausau, came back down here, and today it was 81, a record high in Dallas. So enjoying this heat after we saw snow on Saturday down here.
Oh, wow. So you went from 15-degree weather to shorts. So I guess it doesn't matter that you ripped your jeans in Wausau.
Nah, it didn't matter. Didn't matter.
But, hey, Tony, new year, but same season. But second half of the season, and we had some good storylines that ended 2019, and we got some good storylines that started 2020.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I looked at it, we're about two-thirds of the way through the season at this point. We're definitely seeing a lot of movement, a lot of teams. You have some surprise teams out there, looking at you, Michigan State. And we definitely have some of those teams that are disappointment, looking at you, Wisconsin. So it's interesting to see how the teams are moving. We're kind of figuring out who's going to compete for conference championships, what teams are kind of really going to need to win their conference tournament to get in the big dance at the end of the year.
I 100% agree with that. You mentioned disappointing teams and surprising teams. One team that's surprising me so far, and that's in the ECAC, and that is Quinnipiac, who has really turned their season around in the later stretch of 2019 and even a hot start for them in 2020. So it's definitely someone I know. I think I was shitting on earlier in the year. Has really turned it around for them. But Tony, as always, I think we always like to start in Atlantic hockey. And why change anything from 2019 to 2020? Let's just dive right into it.
Yeah, that's one New Year's resolution we're not going to make. Sacred Heart and Army really. Both teams are receiving votes in the latest USCHAL poll, and for good reason. Both of them right now currently sit at 1 and 2 in the Atlantic. I'm really looking at this as a 6-team race. So 14 points do separate Air Force and Sacred Heart, but Sacred Hearts and Army have played more games than really any of the other contending teams in the conference. AIC comes in with 28 points, Robert Morris at 28, RIT at 25, Air Force at 25. So we're really seeing a good push. And I mean, let's be honest, really for the Atlantic, they're not going to get a team that is in an at-large bid. This is going to end up being a one-bid league. So really that moving and shifting for a high seed in the Atlantic conference tournament is going to be huge. And really whoever comes out, whoever's playing hot hockey at the end, they have enough good teams in this conference that if I'm the number one seed, I don't want to be seeing them in the first round.
Yeah. With this conference, I agree with you. I mean, it's really a 6-horse race right now, and really it's hard not to put the bets on the top two horses being Sacred Heart and Army. Now the difference between Sacred Heart and Army though, is Sacred Heart's offense this entire season. This has been one of the more prolific offenses in college hockey. Overall, they got 87 goals netted so far, 74 being within the conference. But what I love about just hockey in general is that you could put up all the points in the world. At the end of the day, Army's only 2 points behind them. Army's got a stronger defensive core. And the offense is there, but they do lack in it every once in a while. You know, the opportunity for Army was this past weekend against Air Force, who Air Force really, I think, needed to dig deep and get 2 Ws and ended up walking away with not that case. But Tony, just did, you know, interesting fact, the Friday game, Air Force Army, I'm just saying this now. I don't know how I missed this over the weekend, but a 9-round shootout that Army ended up winning. 9 rounds. Oh, so,
was that good goaltending or good? Good shootout moves, I guess, or shots by the offense.
You know, I did not get to see that yet, so I'm hoping I can find the footage of the 9 rounds. Now, I would chalk that up to probably some good goaltending. Both Sacred Heart and Army do have solid goaltending in that, and both of them are the reasons why they're still contending for an Atlantic Hockey Championship.
So I noticed, and you brought up the fact of how many goals Sacred Heart scores. Sacred Heart's there's only two teams with more goals scored overall this season, and that's Penn State and North Dakota. They've scored 88 goals. Penn State's at 80, or Sacred Heart's at 87. So they're not far behind.
No, and I remember I watched a couple games early on this season One being Sacred Heart versus Robert Morse, which I remember was a weekend series that I had circled on my calendar. And Sacred Heart just absolutely came out firing on all cylinders and honestly kind of made Robert Morse look a little silly when I thought Robert Morse was the contender for this conference. So they kind of proved me wrong. And Sacred Heart right now, this is their conference to lose. I mean, they got their foot on the gas pedal right now. Army's right behind them. And then, like we've mentioned, four teams are right behind that. But right now, Sacred Heart has all the momentum going into the second half of the season.
And you know, I've been high on them for a while, but AIC is a team that they've played three less games than Sacred Heart and sit 11 points back. All of a sudden, they get hot and they can make up those games. I look at this as a potential 3-4 team race. Our RIT and Air Force can get hot and get into it, but really at the end of the day, it's a 4-team race for this regular season crown. But like we said, these teams just need to get hot at the end of the season and play good hockey in the conference tournament.
No doubt. I mean, what's disappointing for at least the contenders that are behind Army and Sacred Heart being Robert Morris and a couple other programs here. I mean, Robert Morris, you had the opportunity last weekend to go up against a good Penn State, a team that you're going to see in the big tournament here in the late stretch. I think we can all agree on that. And, you know, losing 6-2, it just shows that Robert Morris is just not strong outside this conference, at least when it came to this Penn State game. It was a one-game series, I believe. So, you know, you can't always base it off one game. But, you know, Penn State did come out 6-2 with the victory there. Tony, you know, not a lot of games I have circled on here. A lot of games, I think, if we looked at it, you know, they're basically, you know, the games that we would hope that these teams can win. I mean, if we're going to pick any, you know, weekend game here, RIT versus Arizona State, I think would be an intriguing game to watch. Arizona State, you know, just has that nice prolific offense that helps them really, you know, push the, and they're getting better and better in the later stretch here. I mean, outside of that, though, it's, you know, Robert Morris, Mercyhurst, AIC, Bentley. I mean, these are just games that the top half of the conference needs to win.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a good let's pick up 6 points this weekend, or 3 points if you only play one game, for the big dogs in this conference.
Yeah, but so let's just switch gears here. As always, we go into the next ECAC, which Tony is still also a little bit of a tight race here.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, there are a few teams that really stand out to me. They have about four teams that are ranked in the USCHL poll, a couple receiving votes. The teams that really jump out, I mean, Cornell sitting, they're tied at number one in the country with North Dakota right now. Clarkson comes in at number seven. Harvard's at number 16. Quinnipiac, like you mentioned earlier, jumped in the top 20 this week at number 20. Colgate and Dartmouth is receiving votes. And then RPI and Colgate are within striking distance of these top teams. But I mean, really, Clarkson and Cornell to me just stand out so much in this conference with how good they are. You know, Clarkson has scored the most goals in this conference, but when you look at it, I think Cornell is the best team. I mean, they're sitting with one loss all season. They've played 15 games. They're 12-1-2. They've scored 55 goals in 15 games. They're such a strong team. And this is a team that I think is going to be competing for a number one seed in the NCAA tournament come March.
We're talking about Cornell, right?
Who did I say?
Do you say Clarkson? I don't know.
I meant Cornell.
Cornell, because at the, it's, you know, it's hard to sometimes keep track of these ones, but no, I mean, right at the end of the day, right now it's a close, you know, it's a close race within the conference, a little bit similar to the Atlantic Hockey. Not everybody has played the same amount of games. We're between 9 and 12 games respectively within the conference play. Dartmouth being the lone team at 9 games right now. But I'm with you. I think the top three teams are Clarkson, Cornell, and Quinnipiac. Really, just because Quinnipiac has really turned this season around toward, like I mentioned, or in this later half of 2019, going into the winter break, and you know they're really turning heads here. The offense that was non-existent is now there, and the defense is getting a lot better. You're getting solid goaltending. You know, come tournament play. You know, Quinnipiac will be a team that you don't want to sleep on. A team, though, that has really disappointed me after such a hot start has been Harvard. I mean, that offense was very, very strong early on. I mean, they were lighting the lamp like a no other. And December and even, you know, maybe mid-November, it really has gone south for them. They're still fourth in the conference right now. I think they could be a lot higher. I don't know if they're getting hit with the injury bug, what's going on with them. The offense just seems to have kind of really plateaued, and it just seems to keep falling down little by little for Harvard, and they're slowly getting themselves taken out of the ECAC race right now.
I mean, they did have a nice win last week beating their arch rivals Yale by a touchdown, 7-0 on Saturday. And right now Harvard's kind of sitting in that position where they're within striking distance. You know, when you look at games played, Harvard's played 10, where Quinnipiac and Clarkson have played 12 and 11 respectively, and they're right there within shooting distance. They sit 5 points behind Clarkson for first place in the ECAC. But the important thing to note with Harvard is they're tied for 16 with Michigan State in the pairwise, the dreaded 16th position. So if it ended right now, they would not be in the NCAA tournament, either with Michigan State, even though they're having a really nice season. But they're within shooting distance, and Quinnipiac's not far behind in the pairwise, sitting at 18.
No, and I, you know, like we've mentioned, you know, now we're in the heart of the season here. This is where we're going to really start seeing the teams that really are going to truly want to get into the tournament, and the teams that have really kind of closed up for the season. Clarkson and Cornell and Quinnipiac, like, I think we were in agreement here. These three are the ones that are really playing for their ECAC conference here. Harvard is going to really have to, you know, dig deep in this late half of the season and really get this thing going. Like you mentioned, a solid win last week, and hopefully can get them turned around here.
And they have a big one next weekend. I mean, the game I really have on the books, like I'm interested for Cornell and MU. I think that could be an interesting matchup. Two ranked teams, Northern having a really nice season. Cornell, who's actually sitting at number one in the pairwise, deservingly so. I'm interested for that one. But the big one for me, given the conference implications, Harvard will host Clarkson this weekend. And I'm interested to see how Harvard plays after – you know, after a nice high win against Yale, Clarkson coming off a couple victories beating Princeton and Quinnipiac. They got a win against Quinnipiac on Saturday, so both teams flying very high. This might be one of the best matchups all weekend.
Yeah, no, I was have that circled as well too. No, Tony, I don't know how you are with this, but for me at least, you know, I love seeing that, you know, we got two very high caliber teams going at each other in a non-conference matchup in January, Northern Michigan and Cornell. But you got to think Cornell and even Northern on the other side of the WCHA, they're probably kind of going, well, what the hell? I mean, we really need the conference points, and now we got to play non-conference game here late in the season here. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of the non-conference schedules, you know, this part of the season, because, you know, this is really where the teams are really, you know, trying to drive the nail in here and get the conference points. But I mean, like you said, that will be a fun matchup to watch. But yeah, no, Clarkson versus Harvard, who are coming off solid wins here. Harvard, who really wants to keep things close here with Clarkson, you know, will be an interesting Saturday matchup, because like Tony and I, like we always argue about, or not argue about, but agree on, Clarkson is not playing Harvard on Friday.
Yeah.
So
one thing I want to note with that Northern Cornell series, Cornell's getting in. They're going to be in the NCAA tournament unless like disaster hits. Yeah. Cornell's going to be in the NCAA tournament. Northern's sitting right in that bubble right now. And I mean, I think now is the perfect time to start talking about the pairwise, because we are 2/3 of the way through the season. Northern sitting at that 15. Right now, they're the last team in if it were to end right now. So it's going to be a huge series for Northern.
No, it is, and it will be a nice touch for Northern too to see how are they stacking up with Cornell, who could be a potential number one in the big tournament here. You know, will Northern be able to get, you know, two wins? Will they split? Or is Cornell's offense going to dominate here and, you know, send Northern home with two L's? So it will be a nice touch for Northern to see how they're stacking up late in the season against the team that we're going to see in the late runs here in the playoffs here.
Absolutely. I think that's a pretty good transition to the WCHA, wouldn't you say?
I would agree so. And Tony, WCHA has been an interesting year, and I think they still have one of the top teams. I'm not going to say they have the top team right now because North Dakota, I think, has really, really solidified that, at least in the last few weeks here. But Minnesota State is not far behind from that status that they had early in the year, still leading the conference with 42 points with an offense and a defense that is playing very solid. But, hey, look out. Bemidji State has really climbed up the ladder here in the conference with Northern Alaska not far behind.
Yeah, I'm really excited because the WCHA is one of those. I'm pretty sure it's eight teams make it, and the top four have a first round bye, or not a first round bye. They get a first round home series.
Mm-hmm.
I look at this as there's six teams in this conference to me that are playing pretty good hockey. I mean, again, we've said this so many times. This is Minnesota State's conference to lose, but that 2-6 is kind of. And Bemidji and Northern are kind of like starting to separate themselves a little bit. But for that fourth position, looking at Alaska, Bowling Green, and Tech, I mean, 3 points separate Alaska and Tech, and then Alaska's played two more games than both Bowling Green and Michigan Tech. So I'm really excited to see that matchup because I think for anybody, the biggest – the team that's most important for is Alaska. I mean, like we've talked about before – going up to Alaska is not easy for any team, and having to win two games in a three game series, that's not going to be easy work. And Alaska, if I'm not mistaken, they did not split last weekend. They got a win over Lake State on Friday, and then they tied on Saturday. So they did not split, which is a nice change of pace for them.
Yes, it is. You basically just, said what I was just thinking, and then Alaska, if they can solidify that four spot and get the home ice for the first series, that's going to be Bowling Green going up to Alaska. And if the playoff started today, and that's a long haul for Bowling Green. If I'm not mistaken, besides Huntsville, that's the second largest or longest commute to go play some hockey in this conference. And so Bowling Green, that would make me iffy. I would almost, favorite Alaska in that series if we do get there. What it's amazing for this conference is that Alaska's offense just isn't as strong of an offense as we're seeing in the top four teams or top three teams in this conference. And yet here we are, we're seeing them at the number four spot here because of the amount of splits they've gotten this season in their weekend series. The teams below them, Bowling Green, Michigan Tech, you got to respect their game with Alaska. But outside of that, from 7 through 10, those are the teams that you're hoping to win against. And like you just said, they didn't do that. Alaska with Lake Superior, who's sitting at 7, who's just hasn't had that great of a season. So that's a missed opportunity for Alaska. Northern, who took a little bit of a dip, I think it was at the end of November, beginning of December, has come back now, sitting at the 3 spot. Bemidji State, though, I think has really been a kind of a sleeper here in this conference and maybe in college hockey. We really have not been talking much about them. I think they started the season off slow, if I remember correctly, and just have been slowly creeping up the ladder here. And here they are sitting 2-5 points back from Minnesota State with an offense that's just as good as Minnesota State's, at least in conference play, having scored one more goal than them. And then really it's going to come down to Minnesota State and Bemidji State's defense. Minnesota State right now on paper has a stronger defense and goaltending. But Bemidji State, this could be, if this is the WCHA championship, Bemidji versus Minnesota State, that's going to be one hell of a championship game to watch.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I like this. This, like you said, you hit it right in the head. This conference has had some surprise teams. We're not shocked with Minnesota State, but with the way Bemidji, Northern Alaska, Tech have played this year, I think it is kind of surprising.
It is. I mean, Bemidji State right now in the pairwise 23, so they have a lot to still play for, where Minnesota State's in 3. Now that's going to all change if they keep on winning and we get later, into the February here. But Bemidji State right now is playing for a lot more, I think, when it comes to the pairwise than Minnesota State is. So Bemidji State has that. They see that. I'm sure their players know it, and they're just going to keep on going here. And like I, like we just said, Minnesota State and Bemidji will be a fun championship series, or I shouldn't say series, championship game, if these are the two that are still standing at the end of the conference playoffs. But yeah, don't sleep on Northern. Northern's still a very strong team, and you know, maybe one of these weekends Alaska will pull off a sweep here. We'll see.
And you know, next week, the WCHA is one of those conferences that I'm really excited for next week to see what happens, because there are a lot of big matchups, and we're seeing these top six of the top seven teams all play each other. We talked about the matchup with Northern and Cornell. What is it? Minnesota State travels to Bowling Green this week. Bemidji hosts Tech. So there's a couple really big matchups. I think I missed something here with one of the matchups. I have Northern travels to Alaska. I don't think that's right.
No, Northern's at Cornell. Alaska will be at Ferris State. That's a series that Alaska really needs to get walk away with two wins there to really keep them in the top four here. Bowling Green.
I was looking ahead to next week. Next week Alaska's in Fairbanks.
Okay. Now, with Bowling Green, I think I've mentioned this quite a few times on our podcast here throughout the season. They're not the strongest offensive team, but when it comes to their defensive play, they are a lot stronger because they do like to throw the body around. Bowling Green, home against Minnesota State, tough environment. Bowling Green, I don't know if they're going to get split it, but they're going to make it tough for Minnesota State. I can guarantee that. If Bowling Green gets a split here with Minnesota State, that's a big win for Bowling Green to stay within the top five here in conference play and for down the stretch here when we get closer to the conference playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Tony, well, speaking of getting closer and closer down the playoffs here, one conference that is going to keep getting or seems to get tighter and tighter because we're getting a lot of surprise wins here and splits is in the Big Ten, and Michigan State still rolling, but surprise, surprise, Michigan had a solid weekend this past weekend.
Yeah, I mean, they were the team of the week in my eyes. I mean, getting a sweep of Notre Dame, winning 3-0. I mean, Strassman, the goalie for Michigan, 57 saves, seeing 58 shots on the weekend. So he stood on his head, had a really great weekend, helped the Wolverines pick up a couple victories against Notre Dame, a team that's really good. And that's right now they're dropping, though. They're number 18 in the USCHO poll. But man, if Michigan has another big one next week at Yost, they play Penn State. I'm really excited for that matchup. I mean, every single week, I think the Big Ten, kind of like the NCHC, and I would almost go Hockey East as well. There's so many good teams in these three conferences that every game is pretty much a good one. I mean, next week you have Ohio State hosting Notre Dame and Michigan State traveling to Madison to play the Badgers, which I mean, we talked about how disappointing Wisconsin is this season. They're still a good team. When you have that much talent in a lineup, I mean, that's not a team I want to play. And who's not to say Wisconsin all of a sudden gets hot in the Big Ten tournament and gets into the NCAA tournament. But yeah, I mean, this to me right now, there's really four teams that are standing out above the rest in this conference. That being Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan State, and Notre Dame, with Michigan State obviously being the big shock, but really only 6 points, a single weekend separates Penn State and Notre Dame.
I agree. Penn State right now has been, I think, the consensus number one, and it shows not only on paper, but I've watched a few of their games here. They got a great, great offense. Their speed out of their defensive zone into the offensive zone, and that transition game has been very smooth throughout the year, and they do get solid goaltending. Ohio State, I think, has been one of those teams where I think they should be number one, but there's just been those weekends where you look at Ohio State and going, how did you guys split this weekend after a strong Friday start when you get the W? Because I think Ohio State, at least on paper, is a lot better team. But, you know, the offense just hasn't been there consistently. But it's been there enough where they're tied for second with Michigan State. And then, like you mentioned, and you nailed it right there, Michigan State's been the biggest surprise team, I think, in the not just this conference, but in all of college hockey. Because I know we both, I think, in our first podcast, basically had written them off Which, you know, is unfortunate that we did that, but and they're proving us wrong. And so, but the other surprise too here is Notre Dame, who I think started Tony in the preseason in the top five, and just some bad losses. And, you know, getting swept by Michigan, who was, what, 2-7 at the time in conference play. Offense was just non-existent. Their goaltending has been just absolutely embarrassing. The defense is not there. A program that's really kind of looking for their new identity now since the Red Berenson era had ended a couple seasons ago. And, you know, Notre Dame at home, not only did they get swept, but got shut out. I think it was on Friday that you mentioned. I mean, they're not going in the right direction here. And like you said, you know, they're 18 right now in the USCHO. And at this rate, I wouldn't be surprised if we see them drop out of the top 20. Notre Dame's just, they're going in the wrong direction. They're struggling on offense. You know, I watched them against Western Michigan, and, you know, the first game, the offense just wasn't there. You know, at the end of the day, it went to overtime with Western, and, you know, they got a nice little goal there at the end, right before overtime ended. And then the next day they come out and they win 4-1. But it's just that inconsistency with Notre Dame that's really hurting their season, and then giving up some easy goals here. When we get down towards the end here in the Big Ten playoffs, you know, Notre Dame's going to have a lot to try to play for to get into the big dance here. But, you know, you mentioned Wisconsin has that firepower on offense. That's been, I think, very well known even before the season had started. When you get Cole Caulfield and those other guys out there on the ice, that offense is electric. But it's that defense, that goaltending, that's just killing them every weekend. And, you know, who to say that Wisconsin, like you mentioned, can't get on a streak here? If they do, it's got to come. Yeah, that defense needs to sharpen up and get a little bit better and a little bit more consistent, because the offense is there. And that offense can contend with pretty much any of the big-time schools that are, you know, leading, like a North Dakota, Minnesota State.
And not a good thing for Notre Dame. And even the Big Ten, when you look at this, the sake of like the NCAA tournament and the pairwise right now, Penn State, Ohio State would be the only two teams in the tournament right now. Michigan State sits at 16, Notre Dame's at 20, Minnesota's at 27, Wisconsin's at 30, Michigan's at 31. So it's like you're seeing a lot of teams that they really need to make some noise. Notre Dame's in a position, I mean, all of a sudden you go and get a couple wins against Ohio State on the road. I mean, that's going to jump them, propel them right back up. And that's the good news for these teams. In the good but bad news, you've got a lot of competition to play against and some good teams, despite where they sit in the rankings or in the pairwise. These are good hockey teams. I mean, really talent-wise, the Big Ten, the NCHC, and Hockey East, just there's so much talent in these conferences, really top to bottom, that you can't sleep any weekend.
No, you can't. I mean, I think you mentioned this. I don't think it was in this conference, but I think you mentioned in the WCHA. You know, one weekend can really change this whole conference around with a Penn State loss and a Minnesota win and, you know, whatever else. You know, I mean, right now, you know, Penn State's leading with 24 points and Wisconsin is 11. That seems like a big difference. But if we're looking between Penn State down to Notre Dame in the top four, we're looking at a 6-point difference there.
If we really want to
look, yeah, it's one weekend. If we really want to look at it, to Minnesota, who's only at 16 points, it's a weekend and a half right there, because it's a 8-point difference. So we're looking at a 7-team conference, and realistically, 5 teams are still going to compete for, you know, a top, you know, top spot, top 2 spot here in the conference. And then when we get into the playoffs here for the Big Ten, it will be even more intriguing to see which matchups are going to, you know, come about in the first round.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Tony, let's change gears here a little bit, and let's talk a little bit. Let's go back east, and, you know, Hockey East, one of our top favorite conferences to always talk about.
You know, honestly, like, just looking at the standing, looking at the rankings, looking at these teams, looking at the pairwise, to me, this is the best conference in college hockey. When you're looking at how much now, granted, some of the lower level teams, just because it is a larger conference, just maybe aren't as strong as the lower level teams and say like the Big Ten or the NCHC. But when you're looking at the top dogs in this conference, I mean, it's just there. 6 points separate Providence, who's in first place, and New Hampshire, that's in seventh place. When you look at some of the rankings, at some of these teams that are really going to compete for the NCAA tournament, looking at the USCHO rankings, Providence is 11, Northeastern's at 12, UMass is at 10, Lowell's at 13, BC's at 5, New Hampshire's receiving votes. So it's like you're looking at all these teams that really are going to make some noise come March, and really any of these teams I could see walking away, especially with how the NCAA tournament's set up, being a one game series. Anything can, not a one game series, just one game, anything can happen.
Yeah, and what's interesting about Hockey East for me is Boston College sitting at 5 in the conference right now, 3 less games than the top 2 teams. Boston College has only played 10 games in conference with 14 points. Providence and Northeastern have 13 under their belt, and they're sitting at 16 and 15 points in the conference. So Boston College is hanging around with 3 less games played. That tells me that Boston College, once they get those 3 games back, we could see them potentially in the top 3, if not the top 2 spots here, if they can get those W's.
What's more important, though, Boston College right now sits both number 5 in the country in the USCHO and in the pairwise. I mean, right now they'd be sitting at a number 2 seed, but the top number 2 seed in the NCAA tournament. Right now, if the season were to end, we'd see BC, UMass, Providence, Lowell, and Northeastern all getting into the big dance. So, I mean, it's such a competitive conference. And then they've got, you know, you look at it, New Hampshire sitting at 22, really not far out of those rankings.
All right, we're sorry about that technical difficulty. We started 2019 with some technical difficulties. Why not start 2020 with one? But Tony, we were just recently just talking Hockey East and the pairwise with Boston College and all that. And I think before we ran into that technical difficulty, I was mentioning that it's just crazy that the amount of caliber of schools we have in this conference that won't make the tournament is just kind of amazing. And some of these schools, I'm sure, kind of beat themselves up and get a little disappointed come the end of the year when they don't make the tournament and they have such a successful season. There is one thing I do want to mention about Hockey East. Earlier in the show, we were talking about surprise teams. UConn, number 6 in the conference right now. How are we not talking about this? They're just coming out of nowhere right now and trying to squeak their way back into the top 4 here. A team that was at the bottom of the conference for majority of the first half of the season. And this is kind of another team that's just kind of coming out of nowhere and contending in one of the strongest, if not the strongest, hockey conferences.
Yeah, this is honestly a team, though, they're going to need to win the conference. One thing to note, they do have more games played than anybody else. So they're sitting at 14 games played. BU and has 11, and New Hampshire is 10. So, I mean, that could be one of something with having 3 more games played. But, yeah, they're doing pretty well. They're 8-10 overall this season. I mean, definitely playing good hockey from what we expected, 5-7-2 overall in conference, in a really good conference. So, I mean, you definitely have to give the tip of the cap to them, but it's one of those that it's like, all right, when BU and New Hampshire make up those points, we'll probably see them back down in 8-9 area. But yeah, they're definitely having a surprising season.
Yeah. I mean, they did last week lose to Providence 2-1. That's a pretty good game for them. I mean, you know, Providence, who has one of the stronger offenses in the country, and I think has probably the Hobie Baker winner on their team, with one of the strongest offensive players, if not 2 strongest offensive players in the nation. And they walked away out of Providence with a 2-1 loss. And then they rebounded earlier this week, actually today, and got a 3-2 win over a pretty good Maine team that's kind of had its ups and downs. And they head into the weekend here coming up. you know, they got, I think it's just one game, but it's against a good Northeastern team that's sitting two in the conference right now. So, you know, they got some games coming up in UConn. But they got, there's a quite a few different games here that I'm, you know, kind of intrigued. Providence, New Hampshire. And then we got the BU-BC matchup Saturday. So that will be a fun game to watch, with BC playing UMass Lowell on Friday, which will be another tough game. An interesting game of the outcome there, with UMass Lowell and BC respectively 4-5 in the conference.
Yeah, this week has a lot of good action, and a lot of it features BC. This will definitely be a good telling tale. Is BC, we know they're a good team. Like, there's no question about that. But it kind of puts into that perspective of if they can come out with wins against BU and Lowell, I mean, you have to argue that they're a top four team in the country, and vying for one of those number one overall seeds.
Yeah, for me, I'm just, even when we were in college, Tony, UMass Lowell was such a strong team. And I you know, just couldn't believe that they could never pull the trigger and get that big win and get a national championship. Is this the year that we see UMass Lowell try to do that this year? We'll find out. Do I think they have a strong team that they've had in the past? I don't think so. But are they good? Yes. So it will be interesting to see how they shape up, not only in the Hockey East playoffs, but when it comes down to it, how, where they stack up in the pairwise and they make the big dance. If they make the big dance, we'll be, we'll see how that works out for them. But that's been a team that's been hanging around for the last 10 years or so in the NCAA tournament, and they just haven't been able to get that national championship that I'm sure they're itching to get.
Oh, absolutely. As is everyone right now, they'd be a number three seed in the tournament. And yeah, I mean, that's a scary number three seed. I mean, as you could say with Providence and Clarkson and Duluth as well. I mean, those would be the three seeds. Like, let me repeat that. The number three seeds in the tournament this year would be Duluth, Clarkson, Providence, and Lowell if it were to end right now. Like, that's just unreal. And that's why, like, I will fight anybody. I'm not a good fighter either. That the college hockey NCAA tournament is the best tournament in any sport. I mean, because, okay, yeah, the college basketball tournament, March Madness, is fantastic. But imagine getting the top 16 teams in the country and just starting at the Sweet 16, and that's what you do in hockey. It's remarkable. And this year, I think the top teams, and I want to get into your predictions later, but the top four teams, the top five teams are so good. But I mean, I don't see that huge of a drop off really between, you know, 5 and 15.
No, I mean, I think we've mentioned this before early in the year, the amount of, or the caliber of each program that's in the country right now, it's not within just five or six teams. As we've gotten later and later in this decade here, we've seen a lot of these different programs build some really great, you know, caliber teams here, and it just keeps expanding college hockey. Now we're talking, instead of 5 to 10 teams respectively that can compete for a national championship, we're talking possibly 20 to 25 teams that can really play for a national championship. And, you know, in 5 years from now, and or 10 years from now, we might be talking about 35 teams. I mean, college hockey just keeps growing. And, you know, if you watch the NHL and you don't watch college hockey, you even know this because it gets brought up all the time. The amount of college hockey players that are playing in the NHL right now keeps growing. And why is that? The competition and the recruiting is so competitive right now in college hockey. We're seeing more and more schools get better and better each year. And not just these powerhouse programs that we've known for years to do it. Now we got some of the lower level, I don't even want to say lower level, but some of the non-traditional programs get a lot better. So, you know, when we get to the pairwise and we look at 1 through 16, guess what? 1 through 16 can win a national championship.
There's even teams sitting through 25 that could win a national championship.
Yes.
And I think a lot of that is, it's a really good sign that you're seeing a lot, the growth in America, because let's be honest, college hockey for a long time had been the American route to, to the NHL, or they wouldn't maybe traditionally go major juniors as much. So definitely you're seeing a lot more Americans with the growth, which is great for the sport. But at the same time, I think you're seeing a lot more Canadians who are realizing the value of college hockey. And rather than playing against what 18 through 20 year olds, you're now playing against guys that could be pretty much full grown adults at 23, 24. So it's just that pure size thing. That pure size element, pure experience element. And not only the fact of that, the fact that when you look at college hockey, the environments, the student sections, how great that is, throwing that in with you get to live a college lifestyle. And on top of that, whether it's important for some, I know it probably is, and others it isn't, but you walk away with that college education and you have something to fall back on when in all likelihood the NHL doesn't work out.
You know, I 100% agree. I mean, I think that's why I love college hockey so much. It's not just the caliber of play that's between the boards that's going 200 feet down the line. It's the atmosphere. It's the campuses. It's the student sections. Without any of that, the college hockey is just another hockey game. What separates college hockey from the juniors and the professional level, and you know, like the AHL and the ECHL, which are still professional levels but lower levels, is the atmosphere that you don't experience anywhere else. You get to play in these smaller venues, but the student section and the fans are right on top of you. These places are loud. They're always packed. Whether you're at the bottom of the standings or you're at the top of the standings, these people want to see their school play college hockey Fridays and Saturdays. So that's what, you know, makes it exciting. And you mentioned a lot of recruiting in the North Americas, in the U.S. and Canada. And we've even seen a lot of different schools are going overseas and recruiting out of, you know, Sweden and Finland and Germany. So we've seen not, you know, a lot of players, but we're seeing some, and we're seeing more recruiting out overseas in Europe. Taking place in college hockey, convincing some of these players, hey, don't play in your Swedish league. Come over here and play in the NCAA. We think we can give you a better opportunity and a route to the professional level. And it's like you said, when you know, hockey's not going to be around forever, and these kids are walking away with, you know, an education here to set them up, you know, for the rest of their life. So it's just something that you can't really match anywhere else. If you're, I mean, unless you're looking for the short run and you're just trying to get to the NHL.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, even then now you're seeing some of the top guys in the league have went the college route or even strongly considered it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think as we get later and later and we get older and older, we're going to see it really, you know, I think really turn up here. I mean, because even with the caliber of coaching staffs that we're seeing in college hockey now, and it seems like every program has a legendary and former professional either player or coach at the helm of their program. And right there, that's just a great starting block for recruiting when you have these legendary coaches saying, hey, I want you to come play for my program. You know, the other thing too for me is these kids that are finally realizing, hey, I don't have to go to North Dakota to go play professional hockey. Because guess what? You're going to be sitting for 3 years before you play. So now these kids are saying, well, hold on. I bet I can go to Bowling Green. I can play for 4 years to really develop my skills. And maybe we can see if we can contend with, you know, and you know, the WCHA or whatever else. And I think that's really been a solid recruiting factor for college hockey. We're getting these kids to realize, don't waste 3 years sitting, you know, in the rafters waiting for your turn. These kids are going elsewhere, playing, you know, their 2-3 years, maybe 4 years. They're getting drafted. They're becoming hot free agents. And, you know, then the NCAA sees them go play professional hockey. And that's why we're seeing that professional hockey number with college hockey players grow.
And you know what I'm really interested to see in as far as recruiting goes, because – you know, I heard on a different podcast once, and they were talking about why are we seeing these traditional powerhouses struggle? Like North Dakota has had a little bit of a hiatus from the tournament. Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, some of the Hockey East schools. Why has that been happening? And it got brought up. So many of these schools would recruit their kids and sign these kids when they're, what, 14, 15 years old. And then you miss out on some of those late bloomers. So I'm really interested now that the NCAA has kind of change that rule that you can't sign a kid when they're that young. I'm wondering to see if that's going to we're going to see a shift of power back to what it used to be. But again, with how much parity there is, how much more talent's looking at college hockey, I think it's in a good place.
I do too. I mean, and just to really touch base, you know, last second here on that, you know, it's just amazing, like, these schools that are now becoming Division I programs who have not been around the block very long, and I'm talking about Penn State and Arizona State, and they have some of the top recruiting classes coming in and have in the last couple seasons here. Penn State's recruiting class just seems to keep getting better year after year, and that program just seems to keep getting better and better year after year. And what they entered the NCAA Division I league in, I believe it was 2015. So we're not even, 5 years into this? And that program has really just taken off, and their recruiting has been strong coming from a club level. And even Arizona State, their recruiting is very strong. There's so many kids that are trying to go to play in Scottsdale, Arizona. I know who doesn't want to play in Scottsdale? But they're using that as their recruiting block, I'm sure. And it's working for them. And, they've been around the block now 2-3 seasons, and their recruiting is getting a lot better and stronger too. And it's taking away from the North Dakotas and the Minnesotas, and you're seeing that effect. So, you know, it'll be interesting, you know, with other club teams that are trying to go D1, we'll see if that also, happens for them too. It's going to be very intriguing how this all kind of really spreads out evenly, over the next few years. And we see less powerhouse teams, and we see a lot more even play out there and a lot more competition.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I just hope that with the success of those two teams you just mentioned, we see even more growth moving forward. But yes, with that being said, I think it's time to jump into our last conference that we need to talk about, and that's the NCHC.
Yeah, and we were just talking about a powerhouse team, and that's North Dakota, and they've been a powerhouse team all year. And when it's hard to argue that they're not the best team in the nation right now. This is a team that is just rocking it on cylinders. They get solid goaltending. Their offense is probably one of the best offenses in the nation, and they play a solid defensive game. So are we shocked to see that they're the number one, not only in the NCHC, but they're in the top two in college hockey? Minnesota Duluth, though, is right behind them. They're sitting two in the conference right now, 3 points back. That's a weekend swap right there. And then Denver and Western Michigan are hanging around at 3-4. Western Michigan finally getting healthy in the last couple weeks. They really took advantage of their winter break. Unfortunately, though, they're off to a slow start in 2020. But they did get a nice, I believe it was a 3-on-3 overtime win with Minnesota Duluth. So they did get that split last weekend. I think they're starting to struggle a little bit on the goalie front, because I think Western started using Ben Blacker in the Saturday game. So I don't know if Andy Murray is going back to his, we're splitting the goalies again for the weekend because we overused Bussey, or if he's just concerned, or if Bussey might be hurt. Well, I don't know. We'll look into that later in the season. Miami, though, kind of clawing in there. They're staying number 5 in the conference. I think what's kind of surprising for me, Tony, is St. Cloud is at the bottom of the conference with 9 points. And we can't use the excuse that they have 2 less games or 4 less games. Every team right now is 10 games played in conference. So St. Cloud is just, they're not playing well in the conference play.
Yeah, no, they've definitely been struggling. But, as we talked about with the WCHA, this is a conference where they only have 8 teams. So the top 4 teams are getting that home series in order to make it to the Twin Cities for the Frozen Faceoff. So 1-3, I think we can almost, I mean, there's a little bit, there's a weekend between Denver and WMU, but Denver right now, the number 4 team in the country. I mean, they're sitting at 15-4 overall. Right now, if the season were to end, they would be staying in the Denver area as the number 1 seed. So, I mean, they're in a good spot. And I think North Dakota, Duluth, and Denver kind of have cleared themselves as the top 3. But only 3 points separate Western Michigan.
All right. One last technical difficulty, I hope. But, Tony, we were talking NCHC hockey here.
Yeah, and what I was really saying, and I'm not sure if this piece got recorded, but when you look at the standings in the NCHC, 1 through 3, I think those are going to be the top three. I think you're going to look at North Dakota, Minnesota, Duluth, and Denver, probably fighting for North Dakota and Duluth, probably for 1 and 2. We're probably going to see Denver get in at that 3, but then only 3 points separates WMU sitting at the 4 seed right now and St. Cloud at the 8 seed. Miami's got 11 points. Omaha and CC have 10 apiece. I'm really interested to see that fight for the final home. Who's going to host that series? I'm really interested to see that fight.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the top four get the home ice advantage. You know, it's going to be funny. Western Michigan hosting Miami is the last regular season matchup of the year. A series that I think I'll be attending, at least the Saturday game. And wouldn't it be funny that if it comes down to that, and then the following weekend, Miami might as well just stay in Kalamazoo for a week, because if it ends up being that way and Miami stays at 5, they'll be right back in Kalamazoo playing them for a 3-game series for the start of the NCHC tournament there. So I think that would be just kind of funny if that plays out that way. But, you know, you mentioned, I think it's, you know, it's a lock. North Dakota, Minnesota State is definitely the top two. I mean, between Denver, Western, and Miami right now, you know, what it's a 7-point difference there. It's basically a weekend series right there. So with those three, a lot could change right now and flip around. I think Denver will lock the 3 seed, though, in that. And it's going to really come down to between, I think, WMU, Miami, and Nebraska, Omaha. And really, I don't, you know, Nebraska, Omaha, and CC, they're just been up and down seasons. The offense just hasn't been there. So really, I'm just looking at Western and Miami right now as the 4 and 5 seed. Really, who's going to come out in the 4 and 5? I think Western's going to they're healthy. They're going to get their offense going here. They have a strong defense. Samuelson's now back from the World Junior Tournament. I think Western's going to lock down the 4 seed and this. A home ice advantage that they're going to need just for, you know, flat out. It didn't work out for them last year with CC. Hopefully though, this time it's different with a healthy roster, and hopefully they can stay healthy when we get to the tournament.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, this is to me going to be a three team. This is going to be a 3-bid league. I think North, the three teams we mentioned, and unless one of these Western, Miami, St. Cloud, whoever, wins the NCHC tournament, which that would be a tough thing to do. That's probably going to be the only way they get in at this point.
Yep, I agree. But we do have, like always, I think almost every matchup this weekend is intriguing. North Dakota is going to be playing at the Goggin in Oxford, playing Miami. CC is going to Kalamazoo to play WMU. Denver is at Omaha and Duluth at St. Cloud. All intriguing matchups. And, you know, anybody can really walk out with a W in these matchups. So it's going to be intriguing. You know, can Miami walk out of, you know, this weekend with a split against North Dakota? That would be, I think, maybe the most intriguing headline. Western, this is a series where I think if you don't get the sweep here, you really start kind of hitting the panic button as we get closer and closer to the playoffs. Duluth at St. Cloud. St. Cloud, who's been struggling. This is just kind of a trap game, I think, for Duluth. St. Cloud has nothing to lose here, so to throw everything at them. Duluth, who's coming off of a split with Western, you know, that's going to be an intriguing matchup. And then Denver at Omaha, just don't sleep on Omaha. You know, that they're a solid program. They're not strong, but they will, you know, contend for a split here. And the Denver offense is just isn't as prolific as we've seen in the past years, but it is there. So that's why I think Denver-Omaha could be an intriguing matchup.
And you know, the two that jump out are the two of them that you talked about pretty early on. The North Dakota-Miami and the Minnesota-Duluth-St. Cloud. Both of them go on the road. And what makes it intriguing, you mentioned trap game. And that is the first thing that jumps into my mind, because next weekend we are seeing one of the biggest matchups of the season, North Dakota and Minnesota-Duluth. I think these teams are well coached. I know they're well coached. I think they're going to have in that mindset, especially when you look at it, especially Duluth, St. Cloud, that's an old WCHA rivalry. You can't be looking ahead. And I don't think these teams will, but that's something to keep in mind, especially with two road games.
No, I agree. You know, with Tony here, you know, we've covered a lot so far tonight. We have a lot to look forward to for the remainder of the season. We got a lot of big games this coming up weekend. But real quickly, do we want to transition to, you know, is there any big headlines in women's hockey that we need to be aware of going down the stretch here?
Yeah, you know, I think we have some really good action going on in women's hockey. And there was a little bit of a shakeup at the top this week. Bemidji State upset Wisconsin on Saturday, and we saw Minnesota jump to the number one spot in the polls. Coming up next week, there's some matchups that really, really intrigue me. Minnesota hosts Ohio State. That's a two top 10 teams right there. Harvard and Cornell will play on, I believe, Saturday. Two ranked teams there. Duluth will host Bemidji. Bemidji just coming off that upset win of Wisconsin. So, I mean, there's a few games I'm really, really interested in seeing. And a lot of action packed. I mean, right now, I think it's pretty safe to say that the top two teams in the country, we might see a rematch of last year's of national championship with the Gophers and the Badgers squaring off. That it's a pretty safe thing for me to predict, nothing going off the rails. But I mean, when you look at Northeastern playing really good hockey, Cornell, Princeton, I mean, Clarkson's always a team to worry about. Harvard's been playing well, BU, Duluth, and then Ohio State. I think when you really look at the WCHA as a whole, you're throwing Minnesota, Wisconsin, Ohio State, and then Duluth, which has Maddie Rooney as their goaltender. So it's a really strong conference. That would it shock me if Ohio State went in and then beat Minnesota and Wisconsin in really the same weekend to win the WCHA tournament? Wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, and you know, the cool thing about the women's college hockey, I don't know for our listeners, but you know, Ty Domi was just recently at Spit and Chicklets talking about women's hockey, and he said exactly, I think, what we've been saying all year, and Tony, I think what you and I have just said over the last few years. And I mean, he hits it right on spot. And that's the fact that if you want to watch good hockey, go to a women's, not only college hockey game, but if you get the chance to go to a professional hockey game, you know, he mentioned, I didn't get to listen to the whole clip or the whole podcast, but I did catch a little piece of what he mentioned, and the fact that they don't hit and they go and play the game the way the game's supposed to be played, the transition game, the breakouts, the power plays, the penalty kills, the goaltending, the tape-to-tape passing, the execution, it's all there. If you know, he mentioned that, you know, you just want to be a fan of the game to go see some good technical hockey and see a fast-paced game with a lot of skill, you go check out women's hockey because it's going to all be there. So, I thought that was pretty cool for him to mention that on Spit and Chicklets. We all know Spit and Chicklets is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, hockey podcast in the world. So I thought that was pretty cool for him to mention that and really highlight the women's hockey world, because we know that they're really trying to grow their brand here, and we hope to help them and see that brand grow in the next couple of years here, because there's just a lot of talent that we would just hate to see not be on the ice.
And, you know, jumping a little bit outside of the college game, and the cool thing is, like, the top players do go play college hockey for the most part in the women's game, especially you look at recently, like some of the top Canadians, Sarah Nurse, you know, Emily Clark, Anne Renee Dabians. Yeah, I'm naming all Badgers, but they all went the college route. And I mean, you're seeing it more and more, especially now. That is the route to go. But jumping away from that a little bit, for any listeners who aren't familiar, there were two leagues last year. There's the Canadian League, and then there was basically an American League. The Canadian League folded because, really, is there a point in having two professional leagues? No, it's not a good thing. It's not sustainable. So they recently have a Women's Hockey Players Association that they just did a few games with some of the top players who have boycotted the professional league this year. And one thing that's really cool is that they're going to do a three-on-three skills, not a skills competition, a three-on-three, like, game at the All-Star game with some of the top Americans and top Canadians, which I'm super excited to watch.
I did see that memo just get released. So, yeah, that's going to be exciting because the 3-on-3 matchups in the All-Star games are always fun to watch. And now we get to see the women in action, 3-on-3, U.S. versus Canada, arguably the best matchup in women's college. Or not
best matchup in hockey.
Best matchup in hockey, correct.
Any type.
Yeah, so that will be fun. I'm glad that the NHL did that and they're incorporating it and they're getting more of the women's players involved in the All-Star weekend. I think over the last two seasons, it's been a huge hit. A lot of the fans are enjoy watching them play and seeing their skills. Everybody knows Kendall Coyne, you know, lit up the social media world when with her speed skating and so forth and the popularity of the Hillary Knights and the Natalie Spooners. So to see the NHL incorporate all these former college hockey players who are now professionals into the All-Star weekend, it's awesome to see. It's good for the brand. And, you know, I'm excited to see the 3-on-3 matchup against USA versus Canada coming up here in a couple weeks.
And, you know, maybe it's because I'm a little biased, but I truly believe that is going to be the best part of All-Star weekend because they're probably going to bring it where you see some of these guys in the All-Star game is they might not be going full speed. They might not be taking it 100%. I think this, to me, is the piece I'm most excited about for All-Star weekend.
I agree. But, Tony, I mean, if that's all we got, I don't know, you got anything else before we sign off here?
Yeah, I have one thing. I want to hear – right now, as we sit, what's your prediction for the Frozen Four? Who are they going to be the four teams?
Ooh, hold on. Let me pull up my pairwise list here because I just closed it out. And so are we talking if the pairwise was ending today?
I just mean who are the four teams that you think are going to be standing at the end of the season?
At the end of the season? Okay. I do think North Dakota, Minnesota State, they're going to be 1 and 2 right there. I do like Cornell. And, you know, this is going to be a long shot here. I'm sitting between Penn State and Providence right now, and I'm kind of leaning towards Penn State. I think Penn State, once again, the tournament, I think, could really turn some heads. And that's a long shot, I think. But I think right now I'm looking at Cornell, North Dakota, Minnesota State, and Penn State would be the top four teams right now.
I'm with you on those top three. I went with BC, but I think – there's a lot of teams I could interchange for that fourth one, but I think Cornell, North Dakota, and Minnesota State are just kind of those three teams. Right now, I look at them as that, like LSU, Clemson, Ohio State as clearly the three best teams in the country, and like let's figure out who number four is.
Yeah, and like the college football playoffs, we'll see what 20 teams are going to compete for the last spot.
Yeah, right.
but yeah, no, we got, you know, like we mentioned, this is now we're in the home stretch here. In college hockey, this is going to be a fun way to see how the season ends for some of these teams in the conferences. And when we get into the conference playoffs and ultimately in the NCAA tournament, we will be with you guys each week for every step of the way. And we're excited to see how the season unfolds when we get to the national championship.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm really excited. This is the fun stretch of the season and let's see some exciting hockey.
All right, and that's all we got for this week. And like always, watch college hockey.
Class dismissed.